As you all know, it's this day. And in looking at some things on the web, I came across this little blurb of the top 10 things you will never hear a dad say. I thought these were kind of funny. The first one was, "You know, sweetie, now that you're 13, you'll be ready for all those unchaperoned car dates. Just have fun." Ha ha. No dad would ever say that. Another one is, "You know, I noticed all of your friends have that certain hostile attitude." I kind of like that. You wouldn't hear that either. "By the way, your mother and I are going away for the weekend. You might want to consider throwing a party at the house." And then this one, my favorite, is, "No son of mine is going to live under this roof without an earring. So quit your belly aching and let's go to the mall." Those are things, we all know most fathers would not say that. So even though fathers are going to be honored tomorrow, fathers do have responsibilities. In the book titled Father Need, it's the name of the book, not Fatherhood, but Father Need, the author, Kay Pruitt, focused on why father care is as essential as mother care for one's child. The book mentions that children who experience significant father involvement tend to exhibit higher scores on assessments of cognitive development, enhanced social skills, and have fewer behavioral problems. Now, as we all know, God is our Father and the most important of all fathers. He's our spiritual Father. And let's notice some important qualities of God over here in Psalm 103. Psalm 103. You know, in thinking about this, what we heard in the sermonette, about the mark of the beast in the future, the beast and false prophet truly are going to take upon themselves God. Well, they are not going to come close to what we find described here in Psalm 103. Because Psalm 103 really talks about God, and God's the only one who really technically has all of these characteristics in perfection. Psalm 103, verse 8. "The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in mercy. He will not strive with us, always strive with us, nor will he keep his anger forever." So you see this attitude of mercy that he has for us. And he's slow to anger. Let's look at verse 13. "As a father pities his children, so the Lord pities those who fear him. He knows our frame. He remembers that we are dust." Now, the word for pity here means compassion. Compassion that God knows we're human. God knows we make mistakes. God knows our limitations. He is there for us. So today we're going to look at some examples of how fathers are to act. And we're going to learn some lessons in our life today about being proper fathers. Now, we are going to see some carryover as well when we look at this particular subject. Because we will also see the need for mothers to be proper mothers, because we will get into some parenting advice. And so the title of the sermon, though, is Godly Fathers. Godly Fathers. But as I said, we will also see some other information so that all of us here can listen in and understand what God wants us to do. Let's look at a very good example over here in Genesis 18. Genesis 18, verse 17. Genesis 18, verse 17. The Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham what I am doing? So here, Abraham came down to talk to God came down, which we know later was actually the Word who became Jesus Christ, wondered, should I tell Abraham what I'm going to do to Lot there in Sodom and Gomorrah? Since Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. So it's a question. Should I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do? But God makes a profound statement. I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. So God understood that Abraham would teach Isaac and his household the ways of God. All of his household. Now let's look at Genesis 22 and verse 2. Genesis 22 and verse 2. And he said, take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on the mountains of which I shall tell you. So this was a great test to Abraham. But he said, you take your son Isaac, whom you love. So we see that Abraham loved Isaac. We also see that he loved Ishmael. He actually said to God, well, why don't you accept Ishmael? And he said, God said, no, I'm going to accept, you know, a child from Sarah. Abraham and Sarah. So we come to verse 7, and Isaac speaks to Abraham, his father, saying, and said, my father. So Isaac is talking, asks a question to his father, his dad, and notice what his dad said. Here I am. He listened to Abraham, and he said, here's the fire and the wood, but where's the lamb for the burnt offering? So Isaac is pretty smart here in the fact that, hey, we got all of this stuff, but no lamb. Now, some think that Isaac was only this 4 or 5 year old, 6 year old, according to tradition, Jewish tradition, he could have been in his mid-20s. So he's an adult. He knows what's going on. Something is missing. And notice what Abraham answers him. He says, my son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering. Very definitive. God will provide for himself a lamb. So Abraham went through the test, but he also knew that God would have to intervene either through a resurrection of Isaac or that God would provide this lamb. And so we find another thing in verse 9 that they went to the place and he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. He trusted his father. Trusted God. So you see this real close bond between a father and a son. And they trusted one another. Notice chapter 25, Genesis 25, verse 5. Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac. So when he was ready to die, he bequeathed all to Isaac, but he did not leave out his other sons. Abraham gave gifts to the sons of the concubines, which Abraham had. So he provided for them, and while he was still living, he sent them eastward away from Isaac, his son, to the country of the east. So how many of these sons of Abraham were sent to the east? And they grew up away from Isaac. So Isaac could have some peace where he was. And we also see a lot of those sons and their progeny are listed there in verses 2 to 4. And so we continue, verse 7, the sum of Abraham's life was 175 years, and Abraham breathed his last and died in a good old age. An old man, full of years, and was gathered to his people. Notice verse 9. His sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah. So here you have Ishmael coming back in honor of his father, and Isaac together, both sons, burying their father. So there had to have been some type of bond, even with Ishmael, all during that time, for them to come together and bury Abraham. Now we know, according to the scriptures, that Abraham is the father of the faithful. And Abraham will be resurrected into the kingdom of God, along with all of those of faith. So not only do we have God as our father, but if we are of the seed of Abraham, Abraham set us a good example. And we know he was a man of faith. And we see how he was also very much involved in the lives of Isaac and Ishmael. There's a number of scriptures that we could turn there to show that. He showed us an example of righteousness. And we've always said that God sets us an example. Abraham set us as an example. In fact, on our way to Rolla and back, the signs on the billboard today were, Dad set the example, phones down. And it's so true, you know. I wish in this state they would pass that law that you do not text or have handheld phones. They haven't done that yet. Many other states have done that. But, you know, kids see the examples of their parents. What do parents do? What are parents doing? What are fathers doing that the kids see? Okay, let's look at this first admonition over here in Colossians 3, verse 21. Colossians 3, verse 21. Colossians 3, verse 21. Children, oh, that's verse 20. We're getting into the dads here. Verse 21. Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. The Phillips translation says this: don't overcorrect, lest they grow up feeling inferior and frustrated. The Moffat translation says this: avoid irritating, lest they become dispirited. See, a father's approach can either be compassionate or it can be provoking. One approach leads to encouragement and consideration, compassion. The other approach is going to lead to frustration and discouragement among the children. In the book, The Effective Father, that was written by Gordon MacDonald, he wrote about this one fellow by the name of James Boswell. Now, James Boswell was a noted biographer. Samuel Johnson was a noted English writer, and James Boswell, though, wrote a biography about him. But James Boswell was known as a writer, and he often referred to an event that was so special in his childhood. That was the one day that he remembered very clearly when his father took him fishing. That day was fixed in his mind. And Boswell would write about it often, about how many times he reflected on that day and the things he learned from his father that day, and how much he enjoyed that experience together with his father. And so he mentioned that a number of times. So what happened is, after hearing that particular event being described, it occurred to someone to go and read the account in the diary of his father, James Boswell's father. So someone did. They found the diary, and they found the date to look at what his father had to say about that special day. So turning to the date, the reader found one sentence. The sentence read, "Gone fishing today with my son, a day wasted." Shock. Shock. Can you imagine how James Boswell thought about this? This is when he's an adult. Everything he thought so highly of his father on that one day, his dad said, it was a day wasted. Now, there's some other biographical information that shows the day the father just said, my son wouldn't even really talk to me. Well, his son was listening. And just really put his son down. A wasted day. Just discouraging. What discouragement. How many have grown up with, I'm not asking for any hands here, but so many have grown up with overbearing fathers. So many have grown up where there have been put downs in public and at the home. And that's why some people have a very hard time relating to God. Because is God really a God of love? Oh, absolutely, God is a God of love. Maybe the human dad wasn't the greatest, but that's what we have to avoid doing at all costs. We cannot provoke our children to discouragement. We can't do it. That would be horrible for them. So instead of provoking, what are we to do? Because you got to replace a bad habit with something good. So what do we do? Let's look at Ephesians 6. Ephesians 6 and in verse 4. And we see the answer to that. Ephesians 6 and verse 4. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. So instead of being discouraging, instead of being, you know, putting people down, our kids down, instead of doing that, we need to be teaching them the truths of God. We need to be setting the example of love toward others. And it begins at home, as we find in chapter 5. Let's look at these verses. Verse 25. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Verse 28. Husbands ought to love their own wives. Verse 33. Nevertheless, each of you in particular, so love his own wife as himself. And here also, you see, let the wife see that she respects her husband. Theodore Hesburgh, the president of Notre Dame for 35 years, once said this, "The most important thing a father can do for his children is to love their mother." The most important thing a father can do for his children is to love their mother. See, children see this. Children see the interaction between mom and dad and how dad treats mom. And how mom responds back to dad. Do they see kindness or do they see yelling and arguing and doors slamming? Or do they see calm discussions? You know, because we all have discussions. Not arguments, but we might have discussions. Keep the discussions and the tone, you know, normal so that, how did I get off? But the point is that there should actually be quite a bit of praise being given. Kids can see dad really loves mom. Mom really loves dad. Look at how they treat one another. Look at how they interact with one another. You know, kids are not stupid. They see this from early on. Let's look at Proverbs 31. Proverbs 31. We often think of, oh, well, this is the chapter that just deals with the virtuous woman. Proverbs 31, verse 11. But we see something else here. We see something about the husband. Verse 11. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. Does dad really trust mom? Or is he a control freak, demanding that she do this and do that, and here's only $20 for groceries, you go over $20 for groceries for this week, you're gonna sit in a chair. You know, there have been some husbands like that that I've come across over the years that are so controlling, they can't allow their wives to go shopping without all of this oversight. You know, and here's the amount you got, and you go over it, you're done for. Do kids see that? I overheard a lady one time telling someone that she'd been divorced for 6 years and she loves it. She can go here and there without any limits whatsoever. And I wondered at the time when I heard that, I thought, I wonder how much control, inordinate control, she was under. Did the guy really treat her with respect? What are our children seeing at home? Are they seeing this loving, trusting attitude of dad toward mom? And do they see this respect of mom toward dad? They pick up on that stuff very quickly. Notice verse 28. Notice verse 28 here. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her children praise her mom. Her husband also, and he praises her. She is the recipient of his attention. See, the children in the household should see that their mom is being loved, that their mom's emotional support is being extended by the dad. It's being satisfied by dad. That dad really values mom. That mom is receiving unconditional love. No conditions. So here's where the dad has a great role within the family. And as we've seen already, that the wife is to respond in kind, with respect. You know, from birth, children are extremely sensitive emotionally. A child's first impressions come through his or her feelings, through hearing and taste and touch and smell and sight. A child hearing loving words and seeing caring parents and is touched by mom and dad is a child who's going to be emotionally satisfied. A child who's going to know, mom and dad love me. The responsibility we all have then is to make sure that our children are emotionally satisfied. See, a child deeply, deep down, wants to know and be reassured that they are loved. That mom loves me, dad loves me. Dad loves me. From infancy through the teen years, a child always has in the back of his or her mind, do you love me? That's what they think, deep down. So there are four ways in which a father can do this. Now, and again, by extension, a mom too, by parents. Now, what I plan to do for the next part of the sermon here is I'll be paraphrasing from material from two books. One is titled "How to Really Love Your Child" by Dr. Ross Campbell, and the other book is "How to Really Love Your Teenager" by the same author, Dr. Ross Campbell. And these were recommended to us years ago when we were at a ministerial refresher program in dealing with child rearing. And very interesting material in the book. So I'm going to paraphrase some material as we go through these four different ways in which a father can really reassure that he loves his children. The first point here that we want to cover is point number one, maintain pleasant eye contact. Maintain pleasant eye contact. So I want to cover a couple of points that came out in this first book, How to Really Love Your Child. Eye contact is crucial. It doesn't only make for good communication with your child, but it helps fill up his emotional needs. Eye contact is directly looking at your child, looking in his eyes. And that the child sees you looking in his eyes. You know, when we tend to give the most direct eye contact, "You did what?" And you know, those burning eyes come right into the kid, and the kid just, you know, you don't turn anywhere. You're just disciplining with this deep eye contact. Now, if that's the only time a child receives eye contact, what is he going to think? Where's all the other times? It's only when Dad's yelling at me that I get that eye contact. He's going to think it's, you know, just a negative point of view. So the point is, we cannot refuse to give them eye contact during the rest of the time, not only when one's disciplining them. Otherwise, they're going to feel left out. It's never too early to start. Never too early to start. In fact, even at 2 months, a baby's eyes are searching for what? At about 2 months, a baby's eyes are searching for another set of eyes. That's what they're searching for. Now, they have mom. They look at mom, and mom looks at them. Where's Dad? Where's Dad's eyes? See, so right from the beginning, our children should see Dad's eyes, and Dad's eyes should be really focused on the children's eyes. So proper eye contact is crucial. When our kids see that we're looking at them, we're talking to them with friendly faces, they will do the same to mom and dad, and they'll do the same to other people. They'll look at other people. Eye contact. Now, when it comes to teenagers, there's a little bit different advice here because, you know, the kids grow up. So when it comes to teens, it might be a little bit more difficult, especially if they're not really receptive at the moment for communication. But that's the time we don't stop trying. We don't stop trying. Now, some teens are trying to resolve some situations in their life. They may not know what to think or how to say things. Exactly what do I say to mom or dad? And they're becoming more independent and going through the whole phase of adolescence. Maybe some have had some unpleasant experiences talking to an adult or mom or dad, and they try not to show it. But when this happens, you have to make sure you are available. You're there. And when he or she is ready, look at them. Focus on them. Turn off the TV. Put the newspaper down. Look at your teen. the teen wants you to look at them, wants you to see them. And this is what God does with us. Let's look at 1 Peter 3. 1 Peter 3. Verse 12. 1 Peter 3 and verse 12. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous. God looks at us. His eyes are on us. And not only that, his ears are open to their prayers. That should be encouraging, that our Father looks at us. He sees us. He sees all about us. He's intent on seeing us. He's intent on hearing us. Point number two, how to encourage your children. Point number two, make physical contact. Make physical contact. Surprisingly, there are studies that show that most parents only touch their kids when necessity demands it. You know, you're helping them get dressed in the morning, or you're helping them get into the car. You seldom see a parent on his or her own volition taking the opportunity to touch his child. Not just the hugging and the like, but a touch, like touching him or her on their arm, their shoulder, gently poking them, you know, that type of thing. Research has shown that girls receive five times as much physical affection as boys. So boys need that as well, such as jostling around or, you know, fist bumps or high fives, that type of thing. You know, a child never outgrows his or her need for hugging, and never outgrows a parent touching them. You know what that helps a child understand? Dad loves me. Dad, Mom, they love me. So the role of the father is imperative, especially in providing their daughters and sons with the appropriate image of themselves regarding their sexual identity. Look at the world in which we live today. I mean, all into this transgender business. No, God created us male and female. We're born male or we're born female. And that's it. None of this transgender stuff. That is not what God ever intended. A father can provide children while they're growing up with this appropriate image of what they are. That you are a boy, you are a girl. And the kids will understand that more coming from dad. Now, I want to mention one point here, because it's really sad that this happens. Unfortunately, there's sexual abuse that goes on, sexual misconduct, and inappropriate touching is verboten. It's sin. And, you know, parents have to avoid that. That has to be avoided. But a father still can, you know, touch without being sinful and hug his daughter and his son. But the way the world is today, we got to be very, very careful. All right, now let me go a little bit further with the about teenagers. As the kids get older, they may be resistant to eye contact and even hugging. You know, look at dad. What do you mean you want to hug? They back off a little bit. And but none of them, they have found in surveys, none of them ever reacts negatively to a light touch on the arm or shoulder. They might be reading a book. They might be watching TV. And you go by and you just brush them on the side. They may not even recognize it's being done, but the mind registers it. The mind registers that Dad loves me. Dad loves me. It's a simple thing to do. They may not notice it, but it registers as being positive. But here's the caution. Don't start overwhelming the kids, your teens, with, you know, constant eye contact. You don't look anywhere, but you follow them all along and you're touching them constantly. They'll wonder, Dad's gone nutty. Or they'll say, who took my dad away from me? You got to be very careful not to go overboard if you haven't done it in a while. A parent has to be very careful not to do that if they haven't done it in a while. Go slow at first. But they'll get the point. They'll get the point toward the end that you love them, that you duly do care for them. All right, with this in mind, let's look at Mark 9, verse 36. Mark 9, verse 36. Mark 9, verse 36. And he took a little child, and he set him in the midst of them. So the disciples are all around, the 12 of them. He takes this little child, probably picks him up, puts him in the center. And he said to them, let me get the right verse here. Verse 37, whoever receives one of these little children in my name receives me. Whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me. And so what Jesus did here in Mark 9, verse 36 to 37, is he actually put this little child in the midst. And when he had taken him in his arms, see, he just didn't have hands off here with this child. He brought him in the midst, and then he picked the child up in his arms. He's holding him. It's touch. It is touch. I think I mentioned this some time ago, but still is a profound revelation to me. This older lady did not want to go into a nursing home. And she was really upset when she finally had to go in. Her one son who was in charge of her, got her out of the house and put her in a nursing home. She wouldn't talk to anyone. And it was really sad. And so we'd go and visit. And one time, I came by and we were visiting, and she said, she finally did open up and start talking. She said, there's one thing I miss, and that's human touch. So while we were there visiting, just touch her hand and hold her hand. She said she missed it. The nurses would help take care of her and, move her around and everything, but a touch of compassion, a touch of just that somebody's there for you, was very meaningful for her. And I can see that if we begin to do this when the kids are young and the teens grow up and have that, they're going to know that Dad loves them, that Mom loves them, and they're going to do the same with their kids and their family. All right, point number three is give focused attention. Give focused attention. Now, this ties in both with maintaining eye contact, pleasant eye contact, and making physical contact. But I want to read a couple of things here. Focused attention means that we give our child full undivided attention, that our child feels valuable. Our child feels that he, in his or her own right, warrant the parent's appreciation. It's actually a critical need that a child has. It's difficult, though. It takes time. Our time is being run ragged these days. It's either some program on TV, something on Facebook, something on, some school activity. And before you know it, the family is just torn apart, going here and there and everywhere, and never having a time for focused attention. Focused attention. You know what gets answered right away? A text message. Whatever sounds that makes, but we spend more time responding to a text message immediately than we do when our kid says, "Mom," or "Dad." We're always doing something other than the focused attention we should have with our kids. What about our kids when they ask something? Do we give them undivided attention? You know, one of the best ways to do this is to spend time with each child alone. For instance, if you see your child doing some homework, just pull up a chair nearby, showing that you're there. You may even say, how you doing on this? You know, the other kids might be out there playing, but you have this opportunity with one child. I probably mentioned this story before, too. My mom, we were always trying to get out of my mom who she loved the most. Who do you love? You know, don't you love me? No, I don't love you the most. She would say that to all of us. I don't love you. I love you equally. So we had 5 minutes, each of us, on her lap at one time. I mean, 5 minutes, all right, get down. It's your brother's turn. Get down, now it's your sister's turn. And so we knew Mom treated us individually, uniquely, with focused attention for each one of us. Now, when we get to the book of the teens, it says it may take some time for teens to warm up, but don't quit trying. As they grow older, they actually need more time with the parents. Now, they may think that, well, I can figure these things out myself, but deep down, they really want to know what Mom or Dad thinks, especially Dad, on some issues. A big error in thinking is, well, the kids are older, they're getting more independent, and you tend to back off and do your own pleasures and leave the kids kind of by themselves, and they, where do I fit in this family? It's questions they begin to have. Mom and Dad are doing their own thing, they always do their own thing. Where am I in this family? And so it's very important that the kids know, we not every time do we do things together, but, you know, it's good to do things together. One of the things that my parents used to like to do was to walk. They just enjoyed walking. Now, we didn't live outside in some rural area. We were in the city. It was in a suburb, and all our walking area were the sidewalks and the alleyways. That was our walking area. We didn't have the beautiful sights that we have around where you get out of the city. And that when Mom and Dad said, we're going to go for a walk, all of us went. All six of us. Four kids, well, Mom and Dad. And we'd walk around the neighborhood and down into the little downtown area. People would notice that. And they would say, you know, this is unique. Never seen a family like this walking. You don't see families walking. I don't. It's unusual. But you know, this was when I was a teenager. It felt good. I felt secure. I felt stable. I felt that my parents wanted us around. So, that's, of course, a very important thing. And let's look at scripture here. Let's just look at Mark 10. Mark 10, verse 13. Mark 10, verse 13. And then they brought little children to him, that he might touch them. But the disciples rebuked those who brought them. He rebuked the parents. Or these disciples were rebuking the parents. So they're bringing their kids. What does Jesus do? He was greatly displeased and he said, "Let the little children come. Let them come." He was giving them focused attention. He was giving attention to the children. As the parents were bringing him, he was giving it to, "Let the kids come. Let them come. And don't forbid them, for of such is the kingdom of heaven." So Christ gave attention to children as an example. We too as parents should do that. Now the fourth point, and we'll take a little bit of time in this, but you could spend a whole sermon on this, and that is show loving discipline. Show loving discipline. Now, it's a many-sided factor. Many fathers just use punishment, and that's only one aspect of discipline. As we saw in Ephesians 6:4, fathers, don't exasperate the children. Don't exasperate them. But bring them up in the ways of the Lord. So let's focus in on this this discipline for a minute. Before we get into that, let me just read something from these books. Love and discipline cannot be separated. You have to have it together. Love and discipline are together. And remember that punishment is just a small portion of discipline. It's got to have the foundation of unconditional love. So what is discipline? Discipline basically means it's training a child in mind and character to enable him or her to become a self-controlled, constructive member of society. That's what discipline is all about. Training your child in mind and character so that he's enabled to be self-controlled and a constructive member in society. It involves training through every manner of communication, guidance by example, modeling, verbal and written instruction, teaching and providing learning and fun experiences. And you know, it's much easier to accomplish when the child feels they are loved. One of the worst enemies in raising a child is a parent's own uncontrolled anger. One of the worst enemies in raising a child is a parent's own uncontrolled feelings, especially anger. The kids see that. The teens see that. If all they see is mom yelling and griping and complaining, always about what the kid is doing, and just so angry herself, or if the father, which is even worse because he's the head of the house and supposed to set the example, is yelling and arguing and just angry, well, what does the teen feel like? What does the child feel like? So we have to recognize these kids are smart. They're very attentive to these things. They're attentive to the emotions of the parents. When they see calmness, they will be calm. But when they see this tension and yelling and griping and criticizing and anger at what they do, and I've seen it. I've seen it where some kid accidentally spilled a glass of milk and boy, the volcano of anger comes out. Well, so what? The kid spilt the milk. Big deal. Let's go clean it up. You know, none of us are perfect. We all, you know, get a little bit hyper at times, but we've got to recognize, how is this coming across to the kid or the teen? Remember that the better disciplined a child is, the less punishment will be required. Now, I know this takes time. You can't do this overnight. All of us as parents, we will all admit we didn't do things right all the time. We made mistakes. And I can look back and see mistakes. And I wish I could do a redo on things. A lot of us wish we could do a redo. But it takes being an example. It takes the fact that we must communicate that we show that we love them and that we are spending time expressing our values and morality. You know, God shows that he cares for us. Let's look at a couple of verses here over in Hebrews 12. Let's look at the way God does things with us. Hebrews 12 and verse 5. Hebrews 12 and verse 5. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as to sons. My son, don't despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, scourges every son whom he receives. I think we all realize God loves us. God is not out against us. He's there for us. And so when he chastens us, it's done out of love. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? If you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are not illegitimate and not sons. Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us. We paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they, referring to human fathers, indeed for a few days chastened us as it seemed best to them. But God, he, for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. No chastening seems to be joyful at the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward it yields a peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. So we learn from God, we learn from his word, we learn from the church, and we grow. And we are in training, all of us are in training to develop godly character in our lives. We learn how to live from God's word. And it's corrective. In many cases, we find some really deep correction, but it's always beneficial. Okay, let's look at Psalm 78. Psalm 78. Psalm 78 and verse 1. Psalm 78, verse 1. Contemplation of Asaph. He was the one of the singers there in the court of David. Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard, known, and our fathers have told us. And we will not hide them from their children. Telling to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength, his wonderful works that he has done. Fathers are to teach the children. Grandfathers are to teach the generation to come. That is the responsibility God has given to us. He has established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them. It's repetitious here. It's being emphasized. the children who would be born, that they may arise and declare them to their children, that they may set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments, and may not be like their fathers, a rebellious and stubborn generation. Don't be like those who did evil. Don't do it. So we have to teach our children. I know when our boys were growing up, one of the interesting things was to be able to take the old Bible stories. They're still online, and some have those, and go through the kings, and you begin to read the life of the kings, and why this king was good because he obeyed God, and why this king was evil because he disobeyed God. What should this king have done to have obeyed God? Why didn't he do this? And you could get into some really interesting discussions doing that. We ought to do this with our children. Not so much where it's formal, but you know, you sit and you talk. You have discussion. You have this open flow. This is what Psalm is telling us to do. You know, don't hide these things from the kids or the teens. That the children who would be born, that they would arise and declare them to their own children. So that, you know, their children can learn the truth the same way we all have learned the truth. But not only does our teaching include spiritual training, but wisdom in dealing in the business world and industry, vocation, dealing with what it means to be dedicated and loyal, having a proper work ethic. Let's look at Proverbs 22 and verse 6. Proverbs 22 and verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now let's look at the context of this particular verse. Let's look at verse 1. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. We ought to be teaching our children the need to have a good reputation. Verse 4. By humility and the fear of the Lord are riches and honor and life. The way you receive riches and honor and life is by fearing God. You got to put God first. Verse 8. He who sows iniquity will reap sorrow. You want to get into a sinful life? You're going to have sorrow in your life. Verse 9, he who has a generous eye will be blessed. Gives of his bread to the poor. These verses are discussing reputation, financial matters, business ethics. So not only is Proverbs 22:6 talking about spiritual training, true, but it's also all these other things about being honest, being dedicated, being hard worker, and when you do that, you will do well in life. And this is the way God wants us to live as well. What a child will do later on in life is usually based on the values that he or she learns at home, especially when they're young. Now, some may get off course, but deep down there's something going on in the back of their heads that they know better. And we all pray and hope that those who went off into a different direction will eventually come back. And I believe the majority will do that. Because God never forsakes anyone. He never leaves anyone alone. We would hope that one's spiritual values would not leave, but every person has to make their own decision. But the context here is referring also to training, not only in the spiritual concepts, but in the business concepts as well. I hear more and more employers needing good employees. And for some reason, something has happened in this world where you don't find the integrity that you found many years ago. And one wonders what's going to happen when the workforce does not have integrity. We got to teach that to our children. So no matter whether it is about spiritual or physical things in life, it is something fathers must give to their children. And the children need to know that they are loved. The children need to know that Dad is concerned for me. He's concerned for my welfare. He's teaching me how to live. So yeah, we do have a major role in the life of our children. So does every mother here as well. But God is really focused on fathers, you're the head of the house. You got to set the example. We can't neglect it. God shows us how He is. He is our Father. He's got the perfect character, the perfect quality that we should be developing. And so in conclusion then, let's look at Proverbs 17, verse 6. Proverbs 17 and verse 6. Children's children are the crown of old men. Children are a blessing. You know, all of us who are fathers and grandfathers understand that. They're a crown. The glory of children is their father. Maybe not all the children and teens will readily admit that. I'll tell you, I learned something after I was 18 when I went to college, that my dad was pretty smart. I think we all know that. After about 18, 19, we begin to realize our dads were pretty smart. We thought we were pretty smart, but no, our dads were really smart. And I think we have to recognize that the glory of children is their father. Our children, our teens, want to know that their dad loves them, that their dad is for them and is watching out for them and is respectful of them and loves them. So this is what we are to do. This is what God has given us as a father. So for those of us who are fathers tomorrow, grandfathers, have a happy Father's Day.